Imagine applying for your dream job and getting it, only to find out you can't go and would have to pass it up. In the case of Kristen Ingram, her life changed in the blink of an eye.
From there, got an opportunity to go. The NBA league office has like a junior rotational program. And when I found out about that, I applied, got through the process, was accepted, and then there was a strong pivot to the left. So I get accepted. It's myself and another guy, same age, and then I can't take it. The car is packed, ready to go. Getting ready to drive up to New York. Here, this is happening. My life is beginning. Day before, literally, I'm driving up on Saturday. It's Friday. I can't go.
Also on this week's episode, we discuss the importance of community, learning how to pivot, and the power of doing. And now, episode 11, Acculturation.
Good evening, my fellow citizens.
Are you ready? The main event of the evening.
The ideas.
It's the word that you put in.
The ability.
Can you dig it?
The talent.
I'm going to show you how great I am.
Those who influence, the entertainer, the business leader, and the entrepreneur, they're all right here on Culturation. And now, your host, Justin Epstein.
Welcome to Culturation. I'm your host, Justin Epstein. On this week's episode, we have thought leader Kristen Ingram. Kristen is currently the founder of Plus One Society, a curator of experiences that lead to thought-provoking moments that inspire change for the culture, community, and people. Plus One services the sports, entertainment, and media industries through cause-based experiential projects, campaigns, and events. Prior to launching Plus One, Kristen was the head of affiliate marketing for NFL Network, where she oversaw affiliate marketing partnerships, creative campaigns, and promotion for North America. In her role, Kristen created and developed innovative marketing strategies designed to drive viewer engagement and consumption through linear, digital, and emerging platforms. Leveraging her expertise in building brands, strategic planning, and client relations, in 2015, she was able to garner over $40 million in media value through negotiated barters. As a recognized community leader and award-winning marketer, Kristen is also an advocate for diversity and inclusion. In 2015, Ingram led a cross-departmental working group to launch the NFL Diverse Talent Community, an online recruitment platform that encourages quality, dynamic candidates with diverse backgrounds to join its ranks. Its goals are to engage, educate, and support registered members, connect them with an NFL community manager, and serve as a shared talent acquisition database for human resources across the NFL and its 32 clubs. Ingram also led the NFL's pro-social initiative, NFL Play 60 After School Kickoff, and was the chair of NFL Community Teammates Los Angeles and the Diversity Council Partnership and Recruitment Committee. Prior to joining NFL Network in 2012, Ingram served as a marketing manager at ESPN, where she managed strategic partnerships with Dish, AT&T UVerse, and DirecTV. Outside of her commitments with the NFL, Ingram is passionate about community service and is actively involved with the Los Angeles Mission, LA Food Bank, Miriam's House, and Big Brothers Big Sisters of Los Angeles. As part of her community involvement and commitment to the core values of the NFL, Ingram launched an ongoing organizational initiative that ultimately will provide thousands of personal hygiene kits to homeless and domestic violence shelters in New York and Los Angeles. In 2013, Ingram's community service was recognized by the NFL with the 2013 Commissioner Award for Community Service. With that being said, I would like to welcome my good friend, marketer, strategist, community leader, Kristen Ingram, to the show. Thanks for coming on the podcast today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Definitely. So for those that may not know you or may not be familiar with you, kind of give a little bit of a background on yourself.
Sure. I am recently an entrepreneur. I spent the last six seasons as the head of affiliate marketing for NFL Network. Before that, I was in the affiliate marketing group at ESPN. And before that, I was with Host Communications in Lexington, Kentucky.
Nice, nice, nice. So now, where did you grow up? Did you grow up in Kentucky?
No, I grew up in Portland, Oregon.
Okay, very cool. Yes. And how did you like growing up down there?
Yes. It's beautiful. It's a beautiful place to raise a family, to grow up. And it's interesting now because it's so trendy. and very in vogue to live there. And so that's, the cost of living is really high right now, which is unbelievable. But when you're from there, you grow up with a sense of community and purpose and connectivity to one another. And so that part of it, it's actually like a small town. So that part of it is makes it beautiful to grow up. And now it's really interesting because people are moving there. So there's a lot of transplants, and that changes the dynamic of the city a bit.
Gotcha. Do you like the change that's happening in Portland right now? Or are you kind of whatever about it?
I'm more whatever about it. I don't do change well.
Okay.
So I would like it to be the same, actually, with, you know, mild evolutions, but not droves of people moving into the city.
Yeah, I was in Portland a few months ago, and I remember speaking to one of the people out there. They were saying that, I guess, a lot of tech people are coming out there and a lot of San Francisco folks, and the real estate's just getting crazy.
It's out of control.
Wow. It was beautiful, though, I will say. It's one of the prettiest places I've been. So growing up down in Portland, you know, kind of how did that define you as a kid? What were some of the things? Were you an outdoors type of person? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, kind of go through that a little bit.
Yeah, I was. I mean, you can't grow up in Portland or in Oregon and not be an outdoors person because we spend, you know, 9 months indoors because it's raining and whatnot. And then so when the summer comes, everybody is out and finding a sport or an activity. But my father actually was really into hunting. And so I was born in Eugene, actually. So I started camping and hunting and all that when I was 3 years old.
Oh, wow.
And so, like, I know how to bow shoot and,
you know, I don't even know what that is. I don't even know what that is.
Think like Hunger Games.
Okay.
Like, I'm Katniss.
Oh, wow.
Like,
all right.
Legit.
I mean, I put together an IKEA desk and I think I'm doing it.
Well, that's a challenge.
That is a challenge. Yeah. 9,000 pieces to assemble one desk.
Legitimately, it's hard.
Yeah.
And so I grew up really a tomboy in that I had three older brothers. Our neighbor, which was my best friend, you know, they had two boys, and I just grew up with my dad outside hunting and running around and all that. And so, you know, going from that activity and that life lesson and all that, that really shaped an independence, because my father wasn't, you know, with the affection and the, come on, we can do it. It's like, go figure it out. Yeah. It's like, I'll show you one time and then you're on your own.
Got you. So now as a kid, I'm sure that's difficult, right? Because, you know, you're looking for a certain kind of acceptance, but you're sent out on your own. Now that you're a little older, do you look back at that and look at that as kind of an advantage and kind of something that you're happy that he did, for the fact that it's made you successful in your own right because you have to figure it out?
That's a good question. I'm not sure. I think it's probably a both and. I am the way I am because of all the experiences and the teachings and the approaches that both of my parents and took. But I do wish there weren't as many challenges and hurdles to go over with him to get his approval or to get his attention. Because I think that that led to a pattern, an unconscious, subconscious pattern of looking for that in everything. So the reason I'm so successful and the reason I'm an overachiever is because, like, it was ingrained. Yeah, I was looking for it, you know. So that can be a dangerous road also.
Gotcha. So now you're growing up with pretty much a lot of men, brothers, things like that, tomboy lifestyle. Are you starting to get at sports at this point? Are you starting, like, is this kind of almost like the prelude to your journey into later on?
Yeah, I think if I'm thinking about it, it must have been because I'm surrounded by men now and have been, I mean, my entire life, being in sports and in at the National Football League, especially. I mean, everybody, it's a male-driven industry and field and sport. But I started playing volleyball, and really t-ball is the first thing I started with. Okay. T-ball when I was five.
Nice.
And so since I was five, I've been in sports, but volleyball, which is like my greatest love, I started when I was eight and played all the way through, you know, sophomore year in college.
Wow.
And that's when I found, in sophomore year, I found that we had a sports marketing department at UNLV and interned there. And since then, like, it's been, I never looked back. I've always been in sports marketing since then.
Got it. So you grew up down in Portland at this point. You're, you know, hunting, doing these other things that I've never heard of, but they sound legit. probably like making fires out of just rubbing sticks together. So, you know, you're growing up, you get into, you know, high school, things like that. Mm-hmm. Sports are kind of, is that your focus at this point?
That's my thing.
Okay.
Sports are my thing, for sure. Okay.
Are you, how much is education at this point? Are you really, because like for myself, right, I remember being in school when I was in high school, sports was everything, mm-hmm. right? You're not really thinking like, where do I go to get the best education? You're like, where can I get the best school for sports? But then I've spoken to people that are very balanced, right? And they want to do both. Was sports kind of like that outlet for you at that point that, that's where the energy was most put into?
It was. Most of my energy was put into sport because it took so much to play. So we're in daily doubles. I play club ball, so it's all year round. Okay. So I'm always playing and always training and always practicing, and always lifting weights and all of that. But school came really easy to me. So it wasn't that one trumped the other. I still managed to maintain my grades and get into good schools. I had a couple options. But I just knew I had to go to college. There was no kind of standard of which college. Like, I didn't have to go to Stanford if I didn't want to, but I could.
Yeah, but so you could have, yeah.
I could have. But it just, you know, I was looking for the best volleyball school at the time, and I knew I wanted to leave the state of Oregon. So Oregon has a lot of great schools, but I knew I wanted to leave.
So you weren't necessarily neglecting school. You just happened to pick up education very easily, mm-hmm. and then your energy was really put into then excelling in the athletic community. Mm-hmm. So sports-wise, you know, I've had a lot of people on the show. It's interesting. A lot of them have been previous athletes. Mm-hmm. How important do you think the structure of sports was into kind of your success today?
Mm-hmm. I think it was, it was everything. Because I live with a sports mindset. And I don't know that I mean, you can't get that unless you come up, you know, in a childhood where sports is what you do.
And what is that mindset?
It's one of community, but inclusivity and leadership. And so the reason I love working in sport is because of what it creates for people. And obviously I excel in that kind of environment, but you learn everything that you need to know, I think, through and about life playing sports. And so I'm an advocate for young girls, especially, to get involved in sports. And it doesn't matter which one, but you have to learn that kind of that teamwork and how to get through challenges together.
I think that's a great takeaway. So now you graduate, you go to college.
Yes,
you
I go.
You select UNLV.
At first, I select Tennessee State.
Oh, okay, okay.
I sign my letter at Tennessee State. Okay. I'm going to Tennessee State to have an experience. And then in the 11th hour, I tell my mom, no, I think I'm going to UNLV instead.
Oh, okay.
And she leaves the house and she doesn't come back for about a day because she's so stressed out.
What made you want to make the change?
My father, who I was speaking about, moved to Las Vegas my senior year of high school.
Okay.
And I felt like it would be a great opportunity to kind of build and create a relationship that I had wanted with him if I went to school down there.
Got it.
You know, being older and being able to be more empathetic and understand, you know, that not everybody's perfect.
Yeah.
So it was an opportunity for me to do that.
Gotcha. I'll say it's definitely interesting how sports, I played from a young age and just watching others and, you know, hearing people like yourself, how much we seek our parents' approvals mm-hmm. in the sport world, right? Like, I remember, like, every game my dad would be at or trying to come to, or if he wasn't, you know, and you want to not ball out for yourself, like mm-hmm. you want to ball out for a parent.
Yeah.
You know, so it's interesting that no matter how old we get, that kind of carries over.
Yeah.
No matter what age. So you end up in Vegas. Mm-hmm. Your mother comes home eventually from the hour
she
of leaving.
Home. She drives me to school.
She drives
you
to school.
From Portland to Las Vegas.
There you go. So now you go to Vegas mm-hmm. and, you know, what's your experience like now when you get there?
Vegas was interesting. So growing up in Portland, you have a real sense of naivete. So when you go to a city like Las Vegas, which is kind of like the mean streets of Vegas, it's a hustler city.
Yeah.
People in Portland aren't hustlers. They're just honest.
They're just good people.
And green and believe everybody, because why would anyone lie to you and why would anyone steer you in the wrong direction? And just earnest, good American people. In Vegas, there's some of that. But the majority is not. And I've never been in an environment where so many people are coming in from different areas, which is a great experience. But different cities and different towns raise different children.
Yeah.
And so to be placed in that environment, I learned I'm a quick learner, but I had to learn. So I got a lot of kind of knockdowns and things I didn't understand, the things, why they were happening or why someone would do something like that, or why people would lie in general.
Yeah.
And so I was very trusting, and then learned the hard way not to be as trusting through that experience.
But if you didn't go to a school like that in an area like that, mm-hmm. do you feel like it was almost, ended up being the best decision you ever made? Because if you would have stayed in somewhere like a Portland or another market where that community was as green as you say, mm-hmm. that you wouldn't have been exposed to some of these things earlier on?
Yeah, I think it was I think it was the best decision I've ever made to go to UNLV, and not because of the people or anything like that, just because, when you're a kid, you're impulsive. And so I just decided, it's like, I'm just going to do this. And I didn't really think it through.
Got it.
And so I had to walk on to the team. I didn't have a scholarship there. They didn't know who I was.
Because you switched last second. Mm-hmm. Got it.
They weren't recruiting me. I had been accepted because I applied, but there was no kind of place for me.
So you walked on mm-hmm. your freshman year.
I did.
And you made the team?
I did, but I redshirted because I'm telling you, I'm an outside hitter. The positions were full. They were done.
Got it.
You know, so really, for freshman year, it was just workouts. It was workouts and practice, which I love to play, so it was fine. But then the reason I stopped playing was because it just wasn't fun anymore. And I don't know if that was because it became something people expected me to do. And I was supposed to do it, and then I was like, am I doing it for myself? And I think that's where we can get in trouble, trying to seek everyone's approval, is you start doing things for them and you don't know if you even enjoy it or if it's something that, you know, makes your soul sing or any of that. So it's something to be mindful of.
So, I mean, that's a great point, right? And you have a lot of parents that I feel like their kids are coming up and they kind of say, you're going to like this team or you're going to play mm-hmm. this sport. How important do you feel it is to give children really the creative freedom to make their own decisions? Obviously, guide them in areas where they're going to get in trouble, but giving them that opportunity to figure it out for themselves.
Yeah, I think it's really important. I'm a parent now, and my daughter, oddly enough, is not athletic at all. And so because it's been really interesting, the dynamic of that, because she doesn't learn. She's an artist. She doesn't learn the same way I learn, and she doesn't learn the way I teach, because I have a sports mindset, because you can, and I'm very coachable. You could say something to like pipe me up and I'm good. Like I'm going, like just like kind of like, Tony Robbins me. And for her, that shuts her down.
Interesting.
You know, and so I had to learn how to be different so she could learn. And that's, I mean, I think that's going to be an ongoing process as she gets older, but you've got to let them. I don't know who she'd be if I pressured her into playing sports when she's not athletic and she doesn't enjoy it. But if I let her, if I get her art supplies and I let her take guitar and I take her to dance class, then she, you can see the joy in her.
Well, it seems like your experience kind of was a launching pad to understand how to do that properly very early mm-hmm. on, right? Where a lot of people may not have understood with their child to give them that opportunity or that support that you're giving. So that's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
So now you stopped playing after year two.
Mm-hmm.
How was it to remove yourself from the sports world?
Well, I didn't remove myself. I just pivoted.
Okay.
So when I was done, then I started the internship with the sports marketing department for the men's and women's basketball team.
Okay.
And so understanding that existed in a business sense
That was
my new thing. Like I was all over it because I didn't understand what it was and I didn't realize it existed. And so I think that's with a lot of careers and jobs and tasks and whatever people choose to do. You don't even, in high school, you don't know all the million possibilities that you can have and be and do until you do. So you have to see it or be exposed to it to even understand that it's a possibility.
Yeah. I mean, I find it interesting the word that you use, that you say pivoted, right? Because mm-hmm. a lot of people would have said I stopped. You didn't necessarily stop. You just changed your trajectory.
Yeah, I'm not a quitter.
I'll tell you though, it's a really cool way to look at it though, right? Is that you went into something that kind of continued the evolution of sports just mm-hmm. in a different arena.
Mm-hmm.
So now you figure out the sports marketing world and mm-hmm. you're interning. How does that kind of change your mindset, your outlook on life at this point?
I think it just opens me up to the possibility of the next phase of my life. And that is when you're done with college, then you work and you find a career path. And so I knew very early, my sophomore year that this was going to be my career path. And I didn't know how that was going to manifest, but I knew that I was going to work in sports marketing.
Wow. So you were one of the rare few that early on in college knew right away this was it.
I told you. I'm an overachiever.
I love it.
I don't mess around.
So now you do this internship. You know, what's kind of the next step for you?
So I do the internship for the next 2 years. I graduate. And so what I think and what I start applying for are sports information jobs for colleges. So because I'm in a college environment, I know that world now and I feel confident in it. And so every college in the country has a sports information department. And so I'm sending, this is back when you were like sending letters out to apply with your resume in it.
Yeah, not Facebooking or linking in people.
There's no such thing.
Which, I didn't even know there was a sports information department.
Well, so you don't know these, see?
Yes.
You might have missed your calling.
Maybe.
But so I'm sending letters out and then people send, companies in college send you letters back. That's how you communicate, which is,
wow,
you know, seems so far ago now. But so I'm sending letters everywhere and I'm getting a lot of thank yous, but no thank yous. And I'm like, oh, God damn it. Like, I'm great. Like, what's happening here? And so I get an opportunity at Mansfield, in Mansfield, Pennsylvania, at Mansfield, like Mansfield College.
Okay.
Do you know where that is?
I have no idea. I know where Pennsylvania is.
Oh, Lord. It's where upstate New York meets Pennsylvania. I can't even. It's on a hill somewhere. It's very small, but they have a sports information department just like everyone else.
Okay.
And so I go there. I spend a year. I mean, there's deer. I'm actually at home because there's deer running around left and right. There's meadows. It's all great. We're on a mountain.
Okay.
And so I spend a year there. I'm writing. That's when I became a published writer. was essentially the post-grad year of college. So I started writing for the team. I was traveling again with the men's and women's basketball team. I'm doing stories on people, just kind of odds and ends work and whatnot. And then from there, got an opportunity to go, the NBA league office has like a junior rotational program. And when I found out about that, I applied, got through the process, was accepted, and then there was a strong pivot to the left.
Okay. So now when you ended up in Pennsylvania for this first opportunity, right, it was the first school that said, yes, we'll accept it, right?
And then I said yes back.
So you said, did you even think about it?
Or no, like, I just want to get my foot in the door. I don't think. I just go.
Do you feel like
that's... I just do.
So when you just do that, right, you just react right away and go with it, do you feel like that's the best? Do you think there's... a different way to approach, or do you feel like, you know what, so many people spend so much time overthinking stuff that you're just like, let me get in the door, I'll figure it out, and then as you said, I'll pivot if I need to.
Yeah, I think it's a part of my charm. I just say yes to things. I think especially when you're young, there's no reason not to, because I've probably failed a million kabillion times. And I don't regret any of those failures. And it's everything. If you're happy with the person you are today, then you've made all the right choices.
Wow.
If you have an issue, then you can pivot. You can make changes to affect the future self. But I'm completely 100% fulfilled with who I am, what I stand for, and what I'm doing.
Got it. So I love that approach, right? Because I feel like so many people are waiting for like that perfect opportunity or the next best thing. But you're like, look, I'm going to gain the experience. I'm going to just get this under me. And then I know something else will be out there because you're just going to put in the work at the end of the day.
At the end of the day, I've always been interested in just doing the work. And I've never had a feeling of, I mean, one of the best things about Portland is that nobody's entitled. We're a very affluent city and you would never know it. Everybody is modest. Everybody is humble. And because everyone does the work. And that's part of the team community piece of Portland, and the way I was raised is that's what's recognized as the work.
You know, it's interesting. You said a little while ago, you talked about how community kind of defines kids, right? And where they come. You never really think about that, right? But when you look at most people that are successful, they all have taken away something from their childhood, or where they were raised is embedded in everything they do.
Everything.
Right? It kind of defines them. Mm-hmm. So it's a good way to kind of look at it.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
Yeah, you have to be mindful when raising kids and being around kids, because you really don't go past who you were in the ninth grade. Like, your core is situated in the ninth grade. If you think about how you were then and whatever you were into, like, you're pretty much the same.
Yeah.
And for me in the ninth grade, the level of discipline that I had to be 14 was incredible. It was years beyond anyone else in my class and my peers. And I was very, very focused. And so those things that kind of made me who I was then, I'm still that way. And there's been a lot of evolution and inner work that's been done. But at the core of it, I'm a disciplined human being. I can do anything because I believe I can do anything.
Wow.
And I've had that.
So now you leave the position in Pennsylvania and you get accepted into this program with the league. And you said there was a lot of people that applied. So you got selected. How many people got selected?
I think it was just two.
Two? Wow, that's unbelievable.
I think it was two.
Okay, pretty big accomplishment. Yeah. You underplay it. I like it. There's that Portland being humble.
Because I'm telling you, there's a strong left-hand turn coming up here.
Okay.
So I get accepted. It's myself and another guy, same age. And then I can't take it. The car is packed, ready to go. Getting ready to drive up to New York. Here, this is happening. My life is beginning. Day before, literally, I'm driving up on Saturday. It's Friday. I can't go.
Wow. Why can't you go?
I can't go. Because life had other plans for me. And her name is Taryn, and she's almost 13, and she's amazing. But
wow,
I can't go. I don't go.
That's unbelievable.
It really is.
So this is the stuff that I talk about, right, all the time, is that people that in whatever industry that they're in, they all have these moments that kind of change their lives. It may be one, it may be three, but when they happen, it's how you react to them, right, that kind of define us. So you make the decision, I can't go. Valid reason why, right? So now kind of what's the thought process here?
So now this may be the first time I've put real thought into kind of decision making.
Yeah.
Because I told you before, I just kind of like, yes, and jump and just go. And I think the beauty in me being able to do that is afforded by my mother creating a net underneath me that I'm not really consciously aware of, but I know that I can just jump out this window, and if I get to the ground, she'll be down there, you know, and this net will catch me, this proverbial net. So I put thought into it because I really want to. I've never wanted anything more than to go start working for the NBA league office.
Yeah.
Never in my entire life, not since, maybe not in the future. That's all I wanted to do.
Okay. Was
because it felt like such a point of achievement for me to stop playing a sport at a high competitive level, start working in a sport at a collegiate level, and then progress. So what players do is go from college to the NBA. And I'm doing the same thing just on the business side. So for me, that's all there was. So it's the same thing Kobe's a bad example because he didn't go to college. But you know what I'm saying? A great player going from college to the NBA, that's all they dream about. That's all they work for. So it's the same type of mentality for people on the business end that are sports minded. And so to not be able to do that is like a horrific, like, career-ending injury.
Yeah. That's a good way to look at it.
That's how I looked at it. And so I was devastated. And all that to say, it just, the really magical part of it is it just took me longer to get there. And I think it had to take longer for me to be where I am now, because once I got back to the sports world, I mean, the NFL rivals the NBA.
Yeah.
They're bigger. They're better. They earn more. You know what I'm saying? It's a bigger brand. And so for the path I had to take to get around, it's just taking the long road.
Got you.
I was on a really quick pace to get there, and I took a longer path.
Do you feel like that path was almost in a way, like, put it this way, I guess the way I'm looking at it is, if you were to have gone, right, to the NBA, do you feel like because of the advancements, because of certain things, and because it was kind of happening in a very natural progression, either A, you wouldn't have been as successful, or B, you wouldn't have appreciated it as much, versus now, kind of because of what you've had to go through and your journey taking a little longer, kind of almost working out for the better?
I think for A, I wouldn't have had, or B, I wouldn't have appreciated it as much for sure, because when things come so easy to me and to people, you don't appreciate it because you really didn't have to go through anything to get it. Hard work is one thing, But to put challenges and hurdles and like knockdowns on that path, that makes it like seem impossible.
Yeah.
So to get to the impossible, you're much more thankful and grateful, and you have a higher level of empathy for others trying to get to a place because now you've been through something.
Yeah.
But I think I would have been how, I mean, it depends on how you describe a success.
Yeah.
So would have I been as successful? Yes, probably more so, because I wouldn't have had been a single mom. I wouldn't, you know, I would have been able to work 80, 90 hours a week. I think, yes, 100%, I would have been more successful.
Gotcha.
If success is getting to a very high level in title and pay. I would have knocked it out.
Okay.
Because that's what I say that because I can see it. I know my other life in my vision, and that's exactly where I was going. That's all I was focused on. And so when I get focused on something, like, it happens. I just make it happen. So going the long road, I think for me, I had to develop a level of consciousness and appreciation and a different sense of being to be where I am now. And in this person, I wouldn't have been able to achieve going the shorter route.
You know, it's interesting because, like, everything you speak on, I take it back to the sports mentality, mm-hmm. right? Because mm-hmm. you're looking at it and almost breaking it down that way, which I kind of appreciate you saying it that way now, because I'm going to start looking at things in that type of mindset. When you look at people like Jordan, mm-hmm. right? I mean, Jordan fell a lot of times in the beginning. And if you look at the best athletes in the world, they always eventually get to their point of success, mm-hmm. right? It's just that not everybody's willing to put in the work, but mm-hmm. then to overcome the hurdles, the challenges, you're going to have to go through a lot more shit mm-hmm. to get to the end result. And not everybody's built for that.
Right.
You know, so it's an interesting way. So now, you know, you have your daughter.
Yes.
And kind of where do you go from here now that you've decided you're going to stay?
So we go to Kentucky, Lexington, Kentucky, for a few years, about 4 years. And I start working with Host Communications.
Okay.
Are you familiar with him?
I'm not.
So Host Communications is now IMG. So IMG.
I know IMG. Yes. Okay.
Bought them out. Host Communications and Jim Host and Rick Ford in particular kind of curated and was the innovator for what collegiate sports marketing is now. So the way you see brands interact with sports, mm-hmm. these two men pioneered that.
Wow. Okay.
Like, they created it.
And did you go to Kentucky for that job?
No.
So it just happened to be there.
It just happened to be there.
So this is
But not just happened to be there, but like divinely was there. Like, who puts a headquarters? But Jim Host is from
Kentucky.
Kentucky.
Wow. All right. So now mm-hmm. you meet these gentlemen. You get this
life-changing. Job. Life-changing. Like, I can't even explain to you how life-changing that was. Because I really, to be quite honest, felt not like my life was over, but it just, like, I was just going to be nothing.
Yeah.
And for the first time, I didn't have a direction and I didn't know what to do and I didn't have a goal. And so those things for an athlete are debilitating, you know, and meeting these two guys, and it was through kind of an off chance that I met Rick Ford, and then he introduced me to Jim Host, and then I started working as a project manager for the Kentucky High School Athletic Association. So I'm back in, so I have to be around sport. I have to be in sports. I have to be around it. I have to be around people that are like-minded in that sense for me to really thrive. So I understand that about myself 100%. But what, having that in a time period where I felt so lost and dark just pulled me right into it and kind of snapped me back into the place where I need to be to win.
Gotcha. So now with Host Communications, what did you do? Kind of what was your role as a project manager?
Yeah, so I managed the account, the Kentucky High School Athletic Association. And so if you're familiar with Kentucky at all, we're a very, very big basketball city.
I do know I'm a Duke fan.
Oh,
but,
God.
Yes, I know. She may take the headphones off now. But yes, Kentucky bleeds blue.
Yeah.
Blue and white.
And so what I was responsible for was building out the program so brands, the same way they interact with collegiate sports, was building out at a high school level.
Okay.
And so being the innovator that Jim and Rick were, that was their vision, was that we have conquered essentially the collegiate level. Where else? What's next? And it was high school. So Mike, I had an account, and so I worked with all the companies and businesses in Lexington and the nearby areas to get them involved in the championship games. We had National City Bank as like my biggest deal I did. I remember without, I mean, I think I can say like 50 grand was their sponsorship, and it was in Kentucky in the early 2000s. That was major, a major sponsorship for a high school level championship game.
Yeah.
And so that was my biggest account. And then I had like YMCA and different things, local businesses. And I did the brand partnerships.
Wow.
I serviced, I sold, hospitality, all of that for them.
Was there one area of this world that you liked the best? Were you into the marketing? Were you into the sales? Were you just into the whole start to finish execution of the deal? Like,
I think I was into the people.
Interesting.
The most. It's funny because essentially I do the same thing now, and I think I just always have done the same thing, because selling and servicing, and this is a time where there wasn't marketing by itself. Sales and marketing was a thing. Like, you couldn't market something if you couldn't sell it.
Yeah.
And so now you can major in marketing, but kids now, they don't know how to sell anything. And it's a disservice and a disconnect. Like, you can't be successful in sales if you don't know how to market, and you can't be successful in marketing if you don't know how to sell.
True.
Like, they go together. And I don't know at what point they shifted and they got into their own schools and their own areas, but it's a misstep. But I loved the people. I loved my clients. I'm obsessed with my clients, but I'm still that way. Like, the clients I have now under my own agency, I'm obsessed with them. All I want to do is service them, be of service to them, get them to their goals. And it's the same way when I was in Kentucky.
Wow. So now you work with them. How long are you with Host for?
Mm-hmm. 2 years, 2.5 years.
Okay. And then what's kind of the next step?
The next step is the reason I left there. So the next step is I start an event planning and production company.
Okay.
Like, on the side. Because one thing is never enough, right? I got to overachieve. And so,
well, it always seems like successful people have a lot of irons,
a lot of things
fire,
happening. Yeah. And so I start this, and I'm able to do it in parallel until one day, one client I'm not able to do it in parallel. And so I get a huge corporate client, and I have to plan this event. And again, like how National City was my hugest client for work, and I get a huge Florida Tile out of Ocala, Florida. Comes to Kentucky for their annual event, and I need to plan it, but I do not have time to do both. And so this was a non-thinking point. I just said yes. And so I went in one day, and I said, Rick, I'm not going to be able to come back.
Wow. All right.
I'm going to give you your 2 weeks.
So you're back to your old self now, just
yeah,
saying.
Yeah, I'm back.
Okay.
I'm back. And so I say yes. I take the account, and then I run a very successful event planning company for the next 2 years that I'm in Lexington with – it was incredible. Like, we were published in all types of magazines. We were featured on when weddings were like a big, big boom.
Yeah.
In 2007, 6, 7, and 8, on My Big Fat Fabulous Wedding on VH1, and all of these things, and planning celebrities, events, and all this, and big farm owners, or down the horse farm owners, as you know. And it was incredible. And so that's where, in that moment, that's where I learned that I love to design and produce. And I didn't know that about myself being, in sports so much.
So, you talked about sports, right? Mm-hmm. And how your daughter's not so much into sports, but this creative element of the producing and the execution mm-hmm. is now kind of where her energy and strength is. Mm-hmm. So it was inside of you. You just didn't know it till this point.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Wow. Okay. And where did you weigh it on the equation? Were they all the same to you? Did this start to take favor? Where was your mindset at this point?
I'm not sure exactly, because after the 2 years kind of producing events and being in Kentucky, I mean, it's still Lexington, Kentucky.
Yeah.
And so I knew that that wasn't enough for me, and I knew that wasn't going to be kind of where I lived my life. I hadn't thought it was hard. I was kind of just going day to day, because there was also, while great things were going on career-wise, personally, I was still kind of cycloning in this dark space. So to future plan wasn't really something I was about.
Gotcha.
At the time.
You were just taking it
day by day. Day by day. Glad to be taking it day by day. And like, just trying to get through the day. And so it all kind of comes to a head on a trip to Atlanta, oddly enough, where I'm able to come outside of my space, and my best friend Monique brings me down here. And I realized that there's more, like, I can do more, and I don't have to be here. I'm not stuck. And I felt very stuck in this dark space. And so I radically change my entire life and decide to get divorced and just kind of say no to, it's very funny. Like, we do this campaign at the NFL called No More. And it's about domestic violence. And it's kind of, I had that moment before a campaign was a campaign where people weren't talking about it.
Yeah.
Where I was like, not another day. Like, this is it for me. Like, I'm going to stop. I'm going to say no. And so when I did that, my entire life, I mean, now we're doing a right turn, a hard right turn. So that happened, and I stopped, you know, planning events. I finished out my schedule, but I stopped planning events and then moved to New York City.
All right. So now you go to New York.
Yeah, I'm back in New York.
All right, nice. So now you get to New York, and kind of what happens when you first arrive there?
Rock bottom happens when I go to New York.
Okay.
I don't know anybody in the city. I've made a huge life change. I'm not entirely self-sufficient or independent at the time. But I know that it's the right thing.
You're just going off gut again.
Again, yeah. Okay. I know it's the right thing, but I don't know how it's going to work.
Gotcha.
And so in the New York time period, which is about a year and a half, 2 years, this is when the faith really got activated. And I didn't know I had it, or I didn't know I needed it. I just didn't acknowledge it before. But in a time when you don't have anything, it's like, I mean, you're grasping. Like, you're looking. It's like, what do I do? What's happening? Where do I go? How? And if you get silent and still, the faith will come in. The spirit will awaken.
So, you know, you're the type of person, it sounds like, from just life and decision-making and business and growth, from when you went to Pennsylvania to now New York, mm-hmm. you always know you're going to figure it out. Mm-hmm. You're just like, let me just get there and then I'll figure this out.
Right.
So most people, do you feel like they don't take the risks or go with the gut because they're so concerned about not seeing the end vision?
I think people are scared. And rightfully so. This shit is scary.
Yeah.
Like, to not know, that level of uncertainty is terrifying. And so I think, though, in those moments, that should be your trigger to go. When you're so, like, paralyzed with fear about a choice you're going to make, do that thing.
I swear to you, like, the last three people that have come on mm-hmm. all said, when you're scared, that's the shit you need to do.
Yeah.
They all have said it. Mm-hmm. Like, it's a consistent theme.
100%.
Wow.
100%.
Okay, so now you're in New York. Mm-hmm. This is kind of when you said you're going through a dark period, but then really you start to look at faith. Faith really starts to
emerge.
Rebuild up and emerge. Mm-hmm. And then kind of what does that process look like?
Mm-hmm. You know, it's emerging, but I don't know. I'm so disconnected from my center and my spirit and source and how, you know, whatever makes people feel comfortable. But I mean, I really get reckless is what I get.
Okay.
Because I feel like I've lost a chunk of time. And when you feel like you've lost time in your life, like, that's all that matters. It's the most important commodity that we have. And so I felt like a time period had been stolen from me. And so I'm out here in these streets trying to get it back on some reckless shit. Yeah. You know, like clubbing, like what 20-year-olds do that I never did. I had, you know, my daughter when I was 21 years old, I had maybe one like martini before then and never like... never again.
Yeah.
And so all kinds of madness, drugs, alcohol, club, like crazy.
But you had to go through it.
Had to.
Yeah.
Had to. And that's, and you know, it's interesting. Everybody has to go through whatever shit they have to go through at whatever time period they have to go through it. So there could be a 38-year-old that has to go through some shit now, but you would judge them and say, you should have your shit together by now. But that's their journey. You can't judge people's timelines, you know, and compare it to yours or anyone else's. But everybody has to go through the shit they have to go through to get to where they need to be.
Yeah.
And it takes a lot of pushing and pulling to get to that place, you know?
Yeah.
So in those days, I don't regret them.
Yeah.
I don't encourage them. And I don't want to go back because that was like a lot of alcohol. But, like today, I mean, even the smell of tequila gets me a little shaky. But it was so necessary to get, because where I had to really get was not at the bottom. I had to kind of get underneath the bottom because I'm that stubborn, because I can talk myself into anything, because the consequences of my action I hadn't quite been able to grapple with. And so God knew, as he does, no, this one's got to go underneath, all the way broken down, all the way stripped, with nothing, like begging for salvation, begging to just surrender. You know what I mean? Like, because I'm that strong-willed. And so it happened.
Wow.
It happened.
So now you go through this period, mm-hmm. right? Really eye-opening, awakening experience. Mm-hmm. Where do you kind of go from here? What's the next year, like, trajectory as far as your career, just life in general? Like, now that you're kind of, I guess as people would say in this day and age, woke, where do you kind of go now that you've gone through this and you've gone to the depths of really the lowest you can go,
yeah.
but through this find some really great, you know, vision and kind of like now you start to become, get a little clarity, it sounds like.
Yeah, a little clarity. But when, what happens when you surrender, I mean, you got it, then you have to build, and building's not an overnight or one day process. So I wouldn't even say that I was woke. I just, my eyes had opened up, but then it's got like it. Well, now where do I go? And so the listening in that space is very important. And so at the time, I was managing a department over at Weill Cornell Medical College, and not that it was any part of my career. I was just working to survive, and yeah. I happened to have get a nice job because, you know, that's just my lot in life. And so I was just working to, you know, pay the bills, but live the life, because in that time period, I wasn't concerned with my career. I was trying to get my life together, my personal life together.
Yeah.
And so what happens next is I try to figure out how to get back on track. And the track is still off course, because in 2009, I get a call from my father. He has stage 4 lung cancer. He's still living in Vegas. I haven't seen him in 5 years. I haven't really spoke to him. He's never met my daughter. He didn't come to the wedding, none of that. And so, because then I had reconciled that I just wasn't going to have the relationship I thought we should have. And fine, that's fine. I'll just live my life. And then I get this phone call in the midst of all of this. And then now I have to decide, am I going to go out here and take care of someone that I felt didn't do a great job of taking care of me? And low-key blame a little bit for the situation I'm in, because I didn't get all the tools that I needed.
Yeah.
And so anyway, I, at the end of the day, I decide to go. So that's, this is 2009 now. I go to Vegas. I pack all of my stuff. And I should mention on over here on in track 2 that my daughter's father wants to move to L.A. And marry another woman and start a life there. And this is all going to happen. And we should all go because it'll help him heal.
Mm-hmm.
And so I say, whatever's going to help you heal, because I feel terrible. I have so much guilt, so much shame. I'm being... like when someone's abused, like an abused mind is a tricky field to navigate, because you don't know what's real. And so anyway, at this point, I don't know what's real. I know that I feel like I've done a bad thing, a right thing for me, but I've hurt somebody. And so I should do everything I can to make them feel better. And so we as a group go to LA, but then I stop over in Vegas for that summer of 2009, take care of my father, get kind of the closure I needed to get from that piece, and just recognize that he was the best father he could be. And whether or not that lived up to my expectation is irrelevant. And so he ends up passing, and then I meet everybody in Los Angeles, and that's how I came to be in Los Angeles.
Wow.
Against my better judgment and will, and I had no desire to ever live in L.A. I'm in L.A. now.
But once again, this is just you following what you feel at that time you're going with.
Just going.
But you know what? It seems like everything you've kind of decided to pursue, or everything you've said yes to, like yes is the common theme that we're learning here.
Yes, say yes.
It always, once again, deep in your core, you know there's a reason why you're going there, and you know, getting the, whether it be closure with your father, or whether it be going to LA and not really wanting to necessarily like it, but knowing for that reason you have to be there,
mm-hmm.
knowing that something greater apparently is going to come from
mm-hmm.
this.
And, you know, I didn't know something great was going to come from it.
Was that the first time?
I don't know if I ever know something great's going to come from it.
You're just open-minded.
No, maybe I do. Maybe it's an assumption. Maybe I assume it. I don't know. Let me think about this, Jay. Because I didn't want to go to LA, so the greatness wasn't sitting in like, oh, this is going to be fantastic. Oh, I'm going to find like start a new life. It was just like it was out of pure necessity. I had to go, and some shit you just have to do.
Yeah.
And being a parent, tons of shit you have to do that you don't want to do. So that fell into that bucket where I had to go.
Got it.
I had no desire to go, but I had to. But in LA, in the beginning stages of LA, that was dark too. This dark period, it was a long period. It was, essentially from, it's probably a 4-year period.
Wow.
Of some things I didn't know how or if I was going to get out of it. Because I just was spinning around.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But also sports mentality. I feel like your strength mentally is probably greater than some people that if they didn't have that. If they didn't have that pressure in sports, if they didn't have that demand, if they didn't have that willpower, you know what I'm saying? They may not have been able to bounce back the way that you bounce back.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I think I've never thought about it like that, but if I didn't have that mindset, if I wasn't so strong-willed and determined, I think I would. Honestly, I would have killed myself a long time ago.
Wow. All right, so now you're in LA.
Mm-hmm.
All right. We're hopefully coming out of this dark period now because now a lot of amazing things start to happen.
Yes.
So where do you kind of go from here as far as next steps? You're in LA. You're getting acclimated.
Mm-hmm.
What are you deciding to do?
So I'm still in a dark space when I first moved there and trying to just understand the city and where things are. I'm totally lost. And get my daughter situated with school and figure out a rhythm there. And really, more importantly, figuring out what I need to be for her.
So you're still on the personal front at this point, not so much the career front. Okay.
No, I don't. So I'm personal front for about the first year of LA. And then it shifts. I really can pinpoint it to this one yoga class I went to with my roommate at the time. And so I had never done yoga. I've never done yoga before, but LA is like known for yoga. And so I went with her. I said yes one time to her to go to this class. And for whatever reason, after that class, I was like self-talking, spirit talking, however, you think about it. And it was like, get the fuck up. You know what I mean? Like, wake the fuck up. Like your life is happening.
Wow.
And from this class in Brentwood, like
it's in Brentwood nonetheless.
And from that day. Then the inner work like really went, and then it was like, no, get my vision board, get my shit together. Like, what do I have to do? What are the actions I need to start taking? So then I became a doer again.
Got it.
And when I'm doing things, then things happen. And so the momentum creates the opportunities. And from that, I got an opportunity to, I had a friend that worked at ESPN in New York, sent over a very understated project position, so it was just temporary, for ESPN in the marketing group. Do I want it? Yes.
Yeah.
Fuck yes, I want it. But I had worked, I had been working at this point for quite a long time to go to kind of like an interim position that wasn't, it wasn't really anything. I definitely appreciate it, but see, that's the level of appreciation. I was willing to essentially start at the bottom again at 28 all over because I had been... Who am I? I'm nobody. I'm at the bottom, figuratively and literally, like I'm at the bottom. And so to have that opportunity at ESPN, I said, yes, I went through the process. I got it. I felt it when I was going up the elevator for my first interview. I was like, this is it. I had had this moment before. I had a full on deja vu. I was like, I'm in the right place. I'm finally back on the right track in life. And I felt it. And so I've been having those types of feelings since that first one.
Wow.
And that tells me I'm going in the right direction. I'm making the right choices to get to whatever, God has for me at the end. I'm going there.
Do you feel like a lot of people don't listen to that or taking those feelings into consideration and maybe not address them. Like, they just think, oh, it feels okay, or it feels this, but they're not really conscious.
Yeah.
And if more people took the time to say, okay, why am I feeling this? Why am I thinking this way? Or they may not give themselves enough credit and go like, oh, this is it. But they're like, well, it will never work. I can never succeed like that.
Yeah. Well, I think it's being attuned to it first. And so there was a lot of the times, even that I had been successful in sports and work and whatever else, I wasn't in alignment with my spirit. And so I didn't hear things like that. And I might have, if I look back, I might have felt a certain way, but you let your mind drive you. And when you let your mind drive you, you make, you know, you might make some missteps or whatnot. But if you listen and are in tune with what your, where your spirit's calling you to go, that's the 100% the right choice every single time. But you have to be able to tap into it. And I mean, I do it for everything. Even if I'm buying like a new car, I have to sit in the car and then tap in, like, is this the thing for me? Is this the right choice? Are we going to get the monthly payments where we need them to be?
There you go.
You know, all, every single thing I do to make a decision, I tap in first. I go inward before I go out.
Wow. So now you go to this ESPN first day.
Mm-hmm.
You end up loving it.
Listen, I love ESPN as an organization, not only for where they brought me out of, but how they function. I have so much respect for that organization and everyone inside of it. And would had, had it been my choice, I would have never left. Like, I'd be there today. I'd be there forever.
Gotcha. So you were there. And what was kind of your role when you were there? I know you said you started at the ground level. What was that kind of entailing?
Yeah, so I was managing clients. So this is where I got into affiliate marketing, which in the cable industry is dealing with Comcast and DirecTV and, you know, AT&Ts of the world. So anyone that carries or distributes content.
Okay.
For ESPN. And ESPN has, I mean, 2,500 channels. So... and Disney and ABC. So all of that's under the same umbrella. And so I work with clients to market our content to consumers.
Okay.
And that's what I was doing. So I was creating campaigns. I was help managing different promotions. Like, if you've ever seen anything with Time Warner or Comcast is down here.
Mm-hmm. Yep, Comcast is
here. If you've seen a promo like Enter to Win, a chance to go to the Super Bowl or to go to Hawaii for Pro Bowl or any of those kinds of things. So that comes from an affiliate marketing person.
Got it. Okay.
A group. And we create that in tandem with the client, and then they push it out through their platforms.
So this job, while it may have started, like you said, not to the level you wanted, mm-hmm. you're right back with the most important thing, which is people.
Mm-hmm.
You're investing into people and yeah. helping people succeed. Yeah. So,
mm-hmm.
all right, cool. So now you end up leaving ESPN,
mm-hmm.
right? I know you said you would love to stay there, but yeah. for whatever reason, whatever plan,
yeah.
the next steps, kind of mm-hmm. where do you go from there?
NFL Network.
Okay. So how'd you end up at NFL Network?
They found me. That's what I was saying. So I was in a project position that was going to end at ESPN. They had it already extended to the 8 months. And I had a conversation with my supervisor at the time, or not my direct supervisor, the head of the group. And there wasn't going to be a full-time position available.
Okay.
And there was, the ironic thing is that there was a director of marketing position in the group that was open at ESPN. And I was like, that's my position. I was like, this is it. Like, this is happening. I put on a full-on presentation, like with video and quotes and like referrals and like dynamic things happening on the screen, created this entire presentation for the head of the group to prove to him that that was my job. He didn't believe it.
Wow.
He thought I didn't have the experience, that I wasn't the right fit, didn't have the right temperament, and it was a no.
Wow.
It was a no. And then, and I'll tell you why this is ironic. You'll see when we get to the end. So then NFL Network found me. They needed someone in affiliate marketing for the media group. And I say yes. I go over there. The package is, the deal is that I have an entire group to develop on my own and run as I see fit.
Not too shabby.
Not too bad. And of course I go, obviously. And the title at the time was manager. It was a manager title. But there was nobody else in the department. So it was like my job to fill it out. So I'm like the head of
your
the team department.
Of one. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I learned, and I had only been in the affiliate business for about a year, but then I learn and develop and process. And because I'm so process driven and efficiency kind of like is my jam, I created an environment where we went from earning and bringing in maybe 5 to 8 million in marketing trade to over 40 million 2 years later.
Wow.
Because of how I negotiated and built deals with our clients and whatnot.
That's an insane growth rate.
It's insane.
And this is literally a brand new division program that you've built out.
Yeah.
So now you got to be feeling pretty good.
I feel good. I feel justified. And in that, no, I feel like he was wrong. Because I almost believed him that I wasn't qualified to do it.
Do you think the reason you were so successful is because you were told no?
Yeah, probably.
And like, it was like a fuel to the fire, like, let me show you what I'm going to do?
Yeah, watch me, motherfucker. Watch me.
Okay, so now you have this insane growth rate.
Yeah.
And then kind of what's kind of your, now that you're up in numbers, things are moving, kind of what's the evolution within NFL Network?
Yeah, so so I go from manager and then I'm promoted to director.
Okay.
And then I go to what we call head of affiliate marketing, and I'm there in the last 3 years, which is just these past 3 years. And so, but the really important piece in the evolution there is not just the growth within my scope in the affiliate world for the media group, but the opportunities to grow in diversity and inclusion for the league. And so I took on a couple of different leadership roles in that space by co-chairing the Diversity Council and running a community partnership group out of LA, and then ultimately creating and leading this cross-departmental group to create a platform to recruit diverse talent, which still exists today.
Yep.
And those things are what led me to do and be where I am now, because I didn't realize the opportunity and the need for such kind of, you know, programs and initiatives and that kind of thing and partnerships with the community and the resources that the NFL afforded me to do all of that work. That was incredible. Like, I never saw that coming. I never signed up for that as a yes to come. I was just coming to do my affiliate job and that was going to be it. But the impact that I was able to have in the community I was living in and in the internal community was unbelievable.
So it's literally, it's almost like the third phase of your life, right?
Yes.
Because you start with, I'm going to go
quarter
into marketing.
And third quarter.
Now we're in the third quarter. We're in the third quarter. And, you know, you start with, okay, sales, marketing, this is what I do. Then all of a sudden you get this creative bug on the production and the event side.
Yeah.
And now you're like, wow, I really have a sense of passion in the community aspect and leadership.
Mm-hmm.
So this becomes kind of like your new purpose, your new
fire,
right? This
is my ethos, yes.
So you have the experience running these diversity programs in the NFL. Mm-hmm. I think you win a couple of awards. I think one from Roger Goodell for, I'll let you tell the title so I don't mess it up, but, you know, obviously people are seeing the work that you're putting in this area and it's making
mm-hmm.
an impact. So now kind of where do you take your next pivot here? Because as of now, like you said, you know, you were in this role for 3 years and now you need to make a new decision in the sense,
mm-hmm.
do I want to put my efforts and energy into this arena? Do I want to do something else or do I want to remain the same?
Mm-hmm.
So what do you like to do?
Well, so from all the service-based work that I'm doing, I understand that I want to be in diversity and inclusion within an organization proper, like as a department. And so currently the NFL does not have that department. And I, of course, felt that I was already doing the job and we could just create a department around me. And again, I could just build it out. They disagreed. And so through that, I decided that this was no longer enough for me. If I was going to be working and spending the majority of my time, I wanted to be of service to people in a different regard. Because I've always serviced people, but it's got to be more than planning the party for clients to just come have a good time. Like, what are we really doing? How are we positively contributing to the community that we're in? Like, how are we being of service in that way? And so from there, this is now we're up to like May 2017. I decide that I'm going to leave the NFL and I'm going to take everything that I've kind of acquired from not only a network standpoint, but a talent and a gift and an understanding and a consciousness, and I'm going to do all of the service-based work that I can do, I can possibly hang on to. So in terms of curating brands and marketing campaigns and event production, I still do those things, but I do them tied directly to a cause, a social cause that has significant impact in the community.
And this is when you launch, we'll say, the fourth quarter.
No, I don't want to be in the fourth quarter.
Okay, well,
I got more to
go.
We'll
extend the third period. We'll extend the third period.
Is that possible?
Yeah. Right. You got a fourth quarter left. There's a whole nother line.
All right, let's go into fourth, and then we'll do overtime.
We'll do overtime
when it gets
that.
Really good.
So now you decide you want to make this change, and you decide to launch an agency, right?
Yes.
And this agency, I'll let you kind of shout out the name, everything that, so people could look it up. But this is when you decide, okay, I'm going to take these talents I've been given, this knowledge, this experience, put it towards the community, and activate with causes, with pretty much something behind it, with a purpose.
Mm-hmm, with a purpose.
So what are you, kind of a little bit about this agency, what it does, who some of your clients are, things like that.
Yeah, so Plus One Society is, it's really a consultancy. Agency is too strong a word. Consultancy, because it's under my direction, and it's with my passion and my own purpose that I'm moving forward. And the reason clients come to me is for the me. And while I have a team to support me, it's an agency's too much, you know.
Got it.
So I decided to leave. So the NFL is still a client, and it's a very interesting relationship. I feel like this is going to be the longest relationship of my life, and. Wow. But it's a lot of, again, pulling and tugging, because we conflict when it comes to the work I think that they should be doing and the work that they are doing. And so I'm a pusher. So I'm like pushing, like, we can do more. And I think when you're in a great place to lead and to affect change, you should take it. And I need all of my clients to feel that way and to operate with that level of responsibility.
Gotcha.
And some get it, some don't get it. So they're a client, Common. So I started working with artists to build out their social impact brands as well. This summer we put on a concert called Imagine Justice to raise awareness for prison reform in Sacramento. And we were able to bring out 30,000 people in Sacramento. We had Common, J. Cole, Letticy, Andre Day, along with Van Jones and Devon Franklin, and really put on a concert to say to lobbyists, to say to the governor, to say to the mayor, we're here, and this is not good enough. We need change. And we were able to get it. And so from that concert, Governor Brown signed on to co-sponsor the bail reform bill, which is coming up in 2018. And it's a huge, huge deal for us and a huge deal for our people. And to be a part of something like that makes it feel like life is worth living to me.
So, you know, what's interesting is, like, when people look at success, and we'll tie back to the beginning of this kind of this podcast, right? How do you define success? And people typically are like, title and money.
Mm-hmm.
Your new currency has really become changing community.
Yes, absolutely.
And does it feel better than money ever felt?
I feel like a billionaire. I'm like Warren Buffett right now.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
So now agency, hold on, the consultancy.
Yeah, consultancy.
I want to make sure I define it right. Is doing well.
Yeah.
It's relatively new, but already seeing a lot of success and growth and really working with like-minded brands and individuals that share the same vision and passion that you do.
Mm-hmm.
What's next for you? What's next for Plus One?
What's next? I don't know. I don't know what's next. And that's okay. Because I know that I've said yes to the right thing. And so it's kind of like the pattern where just saying the yes is enough and doing the work is enough. And however that needs to manifest a result, it'll come. And that's the level of faith that I didn't have before, the consciousness of faith that I didn't have before, is that let me just follow the order. And whatever needs to be will be. Whatever I need to have, it'll happen. I mean, I have a mortgage. I have a kid. I have, you know, all kinds of things. And so people in those heavy responsibility positions don't normally leave their jobs. It doesn't really happen because it's not smart. You know, it's not responsible. And for me to hear a word and to believe it 100% and to take that jump without the net of my parents now is a complete blind faith action that had to be done.
So you've dropped a lot of knowledge today, a lot of I think you're going to inspire a lot of people, honestly, and I think a lot of people are going to see, put in the work, faith, you know, gotta invest into you and say yes. If there's one thing that you want to leave people with today, what would that be?
That's a great question. The one thing that's two-pronged is to invest in yourself, but to invest in others as well, just as fiercely.
I love it. It's a pretty good two-prong answer. So for those that want to follow you, learn more about the consultancy or yourself, where can they follow you? Where can they find more information about you?
Yeah, they can go to plusonesociety.com for anything business and socially at KI Certified on Instagram.
I appreciate you coming on today. A pleasure to have you from the West Coast.
Yeah.
And, you know, honestly, loved having you in here today and appreciate the time. Thanks so much, Kristen.
Thank you so much.
Once again, I'm your host, Justin Epstein, and thank you for listening to Culturation. As always, this show has been powered by Premiere.